Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by contributors from community radio stations across Canada. This episode of Groundwire was produced at CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on unceded Gananahaga territory. I'm your host, Will Anderson. On today's show, we'll cover the worldwide student climate protests.
Well, it's pretty frustrating, the fact that, like, I'm being robbed of my future.
As well as a Manitoba media effort to connect Indigenous youth to their heritage.
And we thought maybe the films would be an avenue which would allow this exchange to occur.
And much, much more. Stay tuned to Groundwire. Our first headline comes from Catherine Fisher of CJLY-FM in Nelson, BC, on traditional Siniksed territory.
The Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives released their annual statement on the federal budget on March 19th. The statement opines that while the budget takes step forward in the areas of municipal infrastructure support for seniors and capping the stock option deduction, it missed the mark on delivering housing affordability and the significant cost savings that can only be achieved through a universal single-payer pharmacare system. According to CCPA senior economist David MacDonald, quote, Budget 2019 identifies the right targets but holds off on making necessary investments. Climate change, unaffordable housing, and the lack of wage raises are issues that can't afford to wait, unquote. CCPA senior researcher Catherine Scott states that, quote, Budget 2019 tinkers in the margins but doesn't offer substantive relief for communities across the countries who are being squeezed and are struggling to afford the basics of day-to-day life. This is a fiscal plan that's more stopgaps than solutions, unquote. The statement also criticizes the budget on not including a national farmer care program, on presenting an employment training scheme that asks workers to pay the costs rather than employers, not addressing the issues that renters face, and not taking bolder steps in greening the economy. It also notes the lack of funding for a national child care plan, large investments to replace fossil fuel infrastructure with renewable alternatives, or a commitment to a comprehensive review of Canada's tax system beyond the stock option deduction.
On Friday, March 22nd, a concert in Montreal became the subject of controversy and serious opposition from the city's Haitian community. The performer was to be Michel Martelly, also known as Sweet Mickey, a musician who was elected president of Haiti following the devastating earthquake in 2010. Martelly is widely opposed for both the misogynistic themes of his music and for his corruption while in Haiti's highest office. I spoke with activist France André at a rally against the concert.
So the reason we're here today is because Mr. Michel Martelly, who's the ex-president of Haiti, who's also Sweet Mickey, known to be a pervert, almost, in the sense of an artist that's usually degrading woman. He was coming to have a show tonight, and we've been working for the past weeks to make sure he doesn't. And as much as he want to show us he has more power than us, well, today the show is cancelled.
The concert was cancelled just hours before it was to take place. While it's not clear at all why the cancellation occurred, André had no complaints.
Well, we have rumors, and the rumors could be for a lot of reasons, but we don't care. The fact is, the show is cancelled, and we will be celebrating. It's a celebration without it's not a protest anymore.
On Thursday, March 14th, a few dozen community members gathered in one of the classrooms at the University of Winnipeg to discuss their concerns about new security protocols at the downtown branch of the Winnipeg Library System. As of Monday, February 25th, everyone entering the Millennium Library had to submit to mandatory bag searches and metal detectors by the security firm Garda World. The new protocols were in response to incidents threatening the safety of staff. Alleged incidents included use of an edged weapon and throwing furniture. Organizations of the March 14th gathering, like John Sampson Fellows, a former writer in residence at the library, raised concerns about racial profiling as well as security measures that could include community members trained in conflict resolution.
It makes people anxious. It makes people feel like they don't want to go to the library. And the library, to me, is my favorite place in the city. So I just really want to go there and in peace and come and go as I please.
On Friday, March 15th, massive climate protests spearheaded by students took place around the world. The marches, motivated in part by the young Swedish environmental activist Greta Thunberg, drew 150,000 protesters in Montreal.
Wait, they did it backwards.
Since most of the marchers in Montreal were students from universities, cégeps, and high schools who walked out of their classes in protest, it is safe to assume that approximately one-fifth of all students in Montreal participated. Alex Apostolides, a Concordia University student, was one of them.
Well, it's pretty frustrating, the fact that, like, I'm being robbed of my future, and, like, my younger brother, even more so, is being robbed of his future, and my nephew now will probably not have a future. And, you know, we put so much work and time and money investing into our education and working hard to have a decent future, when we're not going to have a space to live in. Like, it's just not going to be possible. And it's going to create, like, further, like, injustices for those who are already receiving the weaker end of the stick. So I think it's just really important that we do something about this now.
CKUT also spoke to another Montreal climate protester, Jen Gobby, a PhD student at McGill, representing Climate Justice Montreal at the march.
One of our mandates is to do a direct solidarity with frontline communities. And right now, the Unist'ot'en and the Gidimden and other Wet'suwet'en nations up in BC are on the front line of holding back the expansion of oil and gas in Canada, which is very much responsible for the worst of Canada's pollution, climate pollution. So I see their work as one of the most important things going on right now in Canada. So I'm really wanting to raise up their story and make sure that this climate event is not just about saving white people, but it's also about transforming the systems of domination in this country and around the world, so that communities, indigenous communities and people of color, are not the ones being directly impacted while the rest of us enjoy high standard of living.
In Winnipeg, about 100 elementary and high school students from all over the city showed up on the steps outside the Manitoba Legislative Building. Many of them carried colorful placards, some shaped like tombstones, with messages warning of the dire consequences if governments do not take action on climate change. Members of the CKUW News Collective were on hand to hear some of the voices of protest, including James Bedham, the leader of the Green Party of Manitoba.
You know, these kids, the last time I was here, I think they started their first one in January. They were on the steps of the legislature, able to be here. They had great ideas, great policy ideas, as good as anything that we discuss at our policy committees at the Green Party of Manitoba. So I also think, don't sell the kids short. They know what we need to do. They've got the good policy ideas, and their young youth and optimism is what we really need to make the change in 12 years.
Here's Winnipeg resident Kayla Chafe.
Everyone is seeing daily the effects of our climate shift and us being not following through with being kind to Mother Nature and having that balance of treating it all as one. And no more excuses. We can't have oil and economy without people. So we need to focus on people first, and then everything else will follow. So we want change, no more excuses.
The climate protest took place in other cities across Canada, North America, and the world. Reporting was contributed by Josh Dimakakos of CKUT News and by the CKUW News Collective in Winnipeg.
Help. protesters leading our country. Our problem seems so selfish and misled. All the hours will not move back, and I've tried to catch my
We just heard Roar by Mitch Cota. The following feature was produced by CKUW's Michael Welch and concerns efforts by a Manitoba First Nation to reclaim its culture and history through film.
Bonjour. Migize Kwain Indijnikas. Atiktutem. Baskandabe Weezy Bing. Ndonji. My name is Deborah Smith. I'm the chief of the Broken Head Ojibwe Nation.
My name is James Katsikapo. I'm the lead advisor for the project. We entitled the Youth and the Elders of the Broken Head Ojibwe Nation, tell their history in film.
Geographically, we're situated closely to Winnipeg. I think we are the closest First Nation to the city of Winnipeg. We're like 64 kilometers outside of Winnipeg.
I had a meeting with Chief Smith, and we identified some concerns in the community relating to what the First Nations are dealing with in terms of unemployment and also youth suicide. Part of the research involved reviewing material that originated out of British Columbia, the University of British Columbia. But their work identified was that the issue of mental health and well-being is actually related directly to culture and the issue of a reclamation of culture. And what their work demonstrated that the First Nations in British Columbia that were engaged in actually a revitalization of culture was actually directly correlated to the well-being of the youth in their communities. We decided that the youth are currently engaged in technology, and we thought maybe the films would be an avenue which would allow this exchange to occur between the elders and then the youth in the Broken Head.
My name is Jamie Bear from Broken Head Ojibwe Nation. It's kind of a pretty cool project now. Well, we had to like dress up from like the 1800s, and we had to like portray natives that was like migrating, or indigenous people, my ancestors, I guess. I didn't even know how the hell Broken Head got its name till I did this film project.
Growing up, I was told these stories. But then when I came here to the group and I shared that story that I was told when I was a little girl, and the young men, you know, the response from them about, I've never heard that before. Nobody's ever told me that before. It really opened my eyes to what our young people haven't been equipped with or haven't been told.
My name is William Boutel, and my mother's from Broken Head. I haven't lived out here my whole life, but I've been kind of back and forth. We're working on the film, Our Elders and Their Journey. And so we interviewed a few of our elders, a man and the woman's side, about how it was growing up for them. Back then, like, the community was so involved and they were really strong. Like, if anyone had more than one another, then they would share.
My name is Walter Edward Grey Eyes. I was born and raised here in Scantlebury. 75 years ago, I was born. When you went someplace, you didn't have to lock your door. Leave the door open. Somebody went in. If they wanted to eat, they eat. They ate something. And not make a mess or anything. You're just, you know, everybody was welcome. And now you do that now, you know. You'll have no TV. You'll have nothing in the house now.
Seeing these elders and they come out and they stress on that topic as well, right? And that idea that you got to be there for each other and help for personal growth, as you know, for your community members as well as yourself.
My name is Rose Bear. I was born in this community, the Broken Head Ojibwe Nation, 80 years ago. I think the main thing I talked about in the film was employment and some of the hardships that we've had with not having electricity, roads, or just sort of isolated in this community because there was no connection to outside communities.
The finished products are going to be used as teaching tools. We want to share those with the community members. We want to share them with our school children. And what I also want to come out of this project for the long term is for us to continue telling our stories, because we, in 3 weeks or 6 days of training, we've only touched probably the surface. And I think that there are so many other stories that need to be told.
That feature was supplied by Michael Welch of CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabeg-Aikin, the homeland of the Métis Nation and historical territory of the Nihiyawak and the Nakota. CKUW would also like to gratefully acknowledge the cooperation and generosity of the people of Broken Head Ojibwe Nation in sharing their voices and perspectives for that report. Our final feature comes to us from Olivia Jerry, Josh DeMakakos, and Gao Mahadevan at CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on traditional unceded Ganinahaga territory.
On March 15th, over 250 people gathered at Norman Bethune Square at 6 p.m. for the 23rd Annual March Against Police Brutality, organized by the Coalition Opposed to Police Brutality, also known as the COPB.
Avant de commencer, nous voudrions connaître que nous sommes sur un territoire autochtone volé et non cédé. Bonsoir, merci d'être là et merci à tous de venir se rassembler en cette 23e journée contre la brutalité policière, de participer à cet événement important. Nous savons pourquoi nous sommes là. Nous sommes des victimes, des critiques, des résistants. Nous voulons du changement.
Demonstrators gave speeches, and the COPB organizers spoke of police violence by the SPVM agents against Nicholas Gibbs, a resident of Notre-Dame-de-Grâce, fatally shot in August of 2018 by the SPVM.
Des membres de nos communautés avec une œil critique contre l'institution policière ici à Montréal. Le service de police de la ville de Montréal. Les agents de sécurité de la Société des Transports de Montréal et la Gendarmerie royale du Canada et d'autres organisations autoritaires sanctionnées par l'État ne sont que les bras droits des riches, des sous-fifres du gouvernement du 1%. Les agents de l'État sont la façade...
The COPB also invoked the memory of Pierre Corleone, murdered by the Montreal police in his Centre-Sud apartment in the gay village of Montreal. Their living memory illustrated the brute force exercised by agents from the Service de Police de la Ville de Montréal. The COPB outlined grievances against the SPVM and agents of the STM, also known as the Société de Transport de Montréal, in their commencement speech, including excessive use of force with batons, also known as matraque, assault weapons, unjustified intervention and search, and targeting of racialized individuals at metro stations, including Snowden, Villa Maria, and Atwater, to name a few.
Une mère, une camarade, fut violemment déportée par une organisation dont la légitimité est basée sur le vol des terres autochtones. Les autorités municipales trouvent plus important de payer les agents de l'STM pour battre des gens vulnérables plutôt que de se rendre.
Protesters in the crowd condemned a culture of social and racial profiling created by the state-sanctioned police force employing radical resistance tactics to create intentional disruption in the city center. For safety and security, the COPB provided protesters with phone numbers of two lawyers working pro bono to support any individuals detained as a result of the strike. 15 minutes in, the SPVM, who tailed closely behind the march, declared the protest illegal and ordered individuals to disperse. The police issued this order once the group had not coincidentally crossed the intersection of entering a very gentrified section of the city, featuring luxury apartments, condominiums, and the famous Ritz-Carlton Hotel.
Our next feature comes to us from Rian Adamian from CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on traditional unceded Gananahaga territory.
On Saturday, March 23rd, nine members of the Park Extension community organized a vigil at Parc de la Gare Chantalon to commemorate the 50 lives lost in the attack on the Al Noor Mosque and Linwood Islamic Center in Christchurch, New Zealand on the 15th. An attack that was motivated by white nationalism and Islamophobia.
My name is Nabil Ahmed Mirza. I'm the Imam of the Ahmadiyya Muslim community. And first of all, I would like to thank everyone who is present here. It was a big tragedy. We have seen, and we have been seeing these atrocities committed by the so-called terrorists. And here we are gathered today. Here is a strong message that we are actually giving, that we are united, and terrorism cannot divide us, and love should always prevail over hatred.
What is your name?
My name is Shabana Amir.
What brought you to organize this event today?
This event, decided to organize this event to tell other people that terrorism is not, it has no faith and it has no religion. Terrorism, what happened in New Zealand, it could be happened with anybody, any religion, anybody else. So we should tell the terrorists that we are together. We are together and we are just humans. We are no Muslims, no Christians, and no other religion.
I want to say that we have heard world leaders say their messages of sorrow, sympathy, and to the community. But why not do more from us? Why not go to the mosque and learn more about the Muslim faith? Why not go to the church and attend a mass? Like, we can do this from ourselves, and we have one step to fight discrimination against religion. And I personally would recommend to go to an iftar during Ramadan, because I can tell you that it's a pleasant experience and you'll enjoy it. So let us show that we are there for them and that the communities will welcome you in open hands.
What were your feelings upon hearing about the attack?
Oh, I was so sad. I was brokenhearted. I was really literally crying at that time, because when I heard I have a kid of 5 years, and when I heard about that kid, and I was thinking, like, if there was would be my kid, what could happen to me? So I can feel that pain, the pain of the parents, the pain of the other relatives. So I couldn't explain that in my words. So I was, it really hurts me. It really hurts me. I can say that like, to kill a human, for killing a human, you need, I don't know what kind of heart you need to kill a people.
I'm a Muslim. I'm a proud Muslim. I'm 10 years old, and I'm really proud to be a Muslim. And let's be against terrorism, not a religion. Let's spread love. We're Canadians, and we love Canada, and we're all gonna spread love towards all the religions. No terrorism. Hashtag say no to terrorism. Thank you.
My name is Rizwan Khan.
What brings you here today?
So after what happened in Christchurch, of course, this was the least I could do, is to show up at a vigil to commemorate the loss of life, and of course to send a strong message that we need to unite, and love will always prevail and should prevail over hate.
What were your feelings upon hearing about the event?
Of course, it's heartbreaking to see and to know all the the details, and especially the fact that it was live streamed online and that people saw that horrendous attack. It breaks your heart, and there's something that is close to me because it happened also in Quebec City, so it brings back some painful memories of that. So again, it's a reminder that we need to focus on love and unity in our society.
How have those attacks on the Muslim community globally in Christchurch and Quebec City affected your life as a Muslim in Montreal?
Of course, sometimes there's fear. I hear from people say that sometimes they're afraid of myself, sometimes I feel afraid going to the mosque.
They are selling their slogans for the sake of their political career or to rule a country, to rule over a group of people or the world. But on the other side, whatever they are selling, God knows, whatever they are selling is taking a negative place somewhere in other part of the world. And that's cultivating something that is not acceptable. And we see that comes up, and the other people get victim of it. In this case, the Christchurch area, the big massacre happened.
What do you feel needs to be done in order to act against Islamophobia in Quebec?
Well, we need dialogue. This is very clear. We need people to know each other, to know what Islam represents, that Islam is a religion of peace. Yes, of course, there are groups that use the name of the religion and commit violent acts, but we as Muslims and as members of the community need to come together and to learn about each other, and that is why as a member of the Ahmadiyya Muslim community and as a representative, I invite everyone to come to our mosque. We have open door initiative so that people can learn and actually get to know the faces behind, that at the end of the day, we're all humans and we stand for peace and solidarity.
Is there anything else you would like our listeners to know?
I just wish that we don't forget those tragedies and that we don't just, after a certain point, forget what happened and keep carrying on as if nothing happened. I just sincerely wish that there's a dialogue and that people get to know each other so that we can dispel the prejudice and hate in society and that we can learn to love each other.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced at CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on the traditional unceded territory of the Ganinahaga. Headlines this week were contributed by myself, Michael Welch, and Catherine Fisher. Music this week was from Mitch Cota. This is Will Anderson, signing off for Groundwire.